And we're back. It's been, I think this is probably the longest break we've taken.
It seems like it. It was my fault because I had to go to Vegas last week.
Well, it's not completely your fault. I mean, it's mostly your fault, but not
completely. We had podcast burnout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny when you pick the scab, you go, hey, I got it. Okay, we'll take the week off. That's what the three of us say.
There was a potential of me serving jury duty today. I had to check yesterday. I had to make myself available all week. And every night you have to check their website to see if your group is supposed to go in. And luckily, I didn't have to go in.
Oh, good.
Man, I haven't had to do jury duty in a long time.
I like jury duty. I had to do... I had to do jury, what do you call it, grand jury. And so I was looking forward to it, and then the judge raised his hand, and it was for Greene County. And the judge raised his hand and says, does anybody have any conflicts? I go, I might. And he said, well, come up. I said, I'm suing the Greene County police. And he went, okay, you can leave. I was like, okay.
Well, my plan was to, if there was any, I've never had to serve. I've gotten a few of these summons, but they all just go through and I never have to serve. And my plan was to, at any point when somebody asked what my occupation is, I was going to say the disgusting title of social media influencer, because that just sounds icky, and hoping that would get me kicked off of a vetting jury.
YouTube channel about exposing corruption in the judicial system and be like, all right, you're out.
When I was at CES last week, I was at the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas, and everybody you walk up to hopes you're the next huge corporation that wants to buy their thing, their service, their or if you know you're Home Depot and you're gonna place an order for car chargers or whatever. And I just said, everybody went to, I said, I'm a social media influencer. And they're like, I could see them roll their eyes. And then I said, I have 2 million followers. And they go, oh, well, what is your specialty? And right, I go, all of a sudden they perk. You could use, even if it was 1 million, if you use the million in any sentence with those people, it's like, oh, really? Yeah. I have a potential audience of 2 million people to watch you play with my toy for free.
I have a 20th of a million subscribers. It's like, you can put it in there. Yeah. Depending on how you do the math.
So it did. I just went straight in. I was like, what do you do? I said, I'm a social media influencer. I make things on my channel. Oh, what do you make? It's like metal, wood, plastic.
I personally have never used that phrase.
In that environment, everybody's lying to each other, so it doesn't matter. It's just a trade show, and you're literally passing in the night. You're never going to see these people again. You do make some connections, of course. You, there's no doubt about it. You make some connections. But just passing through and just to tell people what you do. And then you take a couple of videos because then they think you're vlogging and they're like, oh, cool. We're going to end up on a 2 million subscriber channel. Not.
Was there anything cool? Like, did you run across anything that you didn't expect?
Yeah, there was lots of cool stuff. To be honest, the news clips and Instagram clips that distilled the show were more fun to watch than actually being there. Because you walk the entire show, which is like 4 football fields. And then you get home and you flip on the hotel TV and it's like, look at this cool gadget. And you're like, I didn't see that. I didn't see that. I didn't see that. I didn't see that either. And that was the only thing. Met some friends. Got to meet Kyle was there from RR Builders. We hung out a little bit. But the show in general was a team of people on a corner of every spot with a brand new car, shiny, with no descript of whatever they're selling. You know, they might just make a steering wheel that's a smart steering wheel. Somebody else might make like a, you know, a wind jammer that's the smart wind jammer. That's, you know, it's just like everything is smart. Everything is AI. Everything is electric. Everything, no matter what it is. So there's lots of car accessories, lots of robots that you see the Boston Dynamic dog, lots of those, but not yellow. Now they're gray and black. And my business partner was with me. Howard was with me, and he says, we got a robot. I was like, oh, cool. He was running the show on his own, and I was running on my own, and then he's like, we got a robot. So I don't know. He made a deal with somebody to give us a free robot.
What?
I don't know what we're going to do with it, and I don't know if it's ever going to come, but that would be cool to have one of those like robots that run upstairs and just look scary. They really have a lot of personality. They make them small now. Like the Boston Dynamic ones are much bigger. They're like an 80-pound dog, the typical ones you see. These are like Yorkies. They're much smaller. Yeah, they're really cool. Yeah. So there was those and all tractor technology and the farm equipment. There's lots of cool farm equipment that's autonomous. No one has to be actually sitting in the seat of the tractors. It's crazy. Huh. And tons and tons and tons of car chargers, electronic car chargers. And they introduced the new Scout. Do you remember the International Harvester Scout? I'm sure you guys are aware of that car. It was a great car. They stopped making them in 1980. And now Volkswagen bought the brand, and they're building a factory in South Carolina. And the car will be available 2026 or 2028, something like that. 2027. And it's really cool looking.
They are really cool looking.
Two models. They had the pickup truck and the four-door. And, yeah. It was fun to watch that presentation. I just happened to get into their booth when they were talking about it from the beginning, how they have a heritage brand and new technology and user concerns. For instance, they had a whole conversation about how new cars are a little alien to everybody, and because Scout is such a heritage brand, they have buttons and switches all on the dashboard versus sitting there and just seeing a screen in between you and the passenger. And they're also making a model with a bench seat, which is real throwback, without a center. So you could they offer it two ways. You could have the center console or the bench seat. Yeah, it was cool. It was a cool presentation. And it's one of those things where you don't know what sticks until it comes up later.
Yeah.
I got to see the Insta360 booth. DJI wasn't there. I don't know why. Someone said that they've gotten banned from the show for some reason. I just asked one of the other vendors. I said, was DJI here? And they're like, oh, no, they got banned. I was like, I don't know why.
They're flying drones inside the building.
Another interesting tech that showed lots of electric bikes, but lots of record players. There was a section with everyone's bringing back regular old record players, but modernized, and there's a lot of cool record players there.
I wonder what modernizations, other than connectivity, like you can do Bluetooth, you know, you could add things like that, but as far as the actual playing mechanism.
Yeah, not much. I wonder just really what compatibility can be modernized. Compatibility and styling is really a couple of them. There's a company called Crosley.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they had a really beautiful booth, and most of their record players look vintage, but a lot of them were compact so that when it's not being used, but when it is being used, the record hangs out of it in two sides, and you can close the cover and the record's sticking out of it, which I thought was kind of interesting, I guess, because they just assume apartment living. But yeah, it was, like I said, it was one of those shows where you leave and you don't know what. I walked through the Sony booth, and by the time I got out, I was like, I don't know what you guys are selling. I said to one of the people, I was like, I don't know what I just walked through an experience. I said, this is supposed to be an experience. It's like, what's the product? And they're like, well, we have AI and AI. I was like, forget it. I was like, I want to see a camera. What's the new camera? What is the new thing? And there was a woman up on stage with this whole big rig, and she's talking, and I leaned into one of the guys, and I didn't even notice he was a Sony guy. He was just like, He seemed like a Californian, like an American guy. And I leaned in, because there's lots of people from all over the world there. And I just said, what is the product? And he leaned back. He goes, they're selling an experience of and he actually goes, we are, because he's from Sony. He goes, we are selling an experience. That stage is the product. And the stage moves. It does this. It's one of these things that a car would be on in a movie.
Oh.
And it goes up and down, and they make this thing so that a film studio will buy it to shoot car scenes. And that was their big featured product. I was like, okay. Do you still make cameras? Do you still make cameras?
It's a mighty big company.
Yeah. Anyway, seriously. It was fun. It was fun to experience and see. And I was there for Eaton Electric. They're going to be supplying a lot of the connectivity for the house that I'm building down the road, that I'm restoring the graveyard house. So that was the whole purpose.
How did your display come out?
Oh, interesting. You should ask. It did actually work. They sent me. I was.
It did actually work. Was there a chance that it wasn't going to?
Well, you know, when you ship a fragile object across the country, you don't know what's going to happen. It's really completely out of your hands. He sent me a picture. I was at the airport, and they sent me a picture of it hanging, and it was blue. The brand color is blue. And I was like, oh, that's great. Amazing. I said, thank God. I'm so relieved it works. It's plugged in and it looks pretty good. And then he sends me a message. He goes, by chance, did you pack the remote control? I was like, 100%. He's like, yeah, they said it wasn't in the box. I said, that can't be true. So this is where it's important to CYA. And I cover your ass. I went through my pictures, and within not even 30 seconds of him asking, did you pack the controller? I sent him a picture of the uncovered box, or the open box that I sent. It's a giant crate. And I circled it, screen grabbed, circled. This is the controller, and these are the extra lights I sent along. And he says, interesting, they said nothing else was in the box but the thing. I was like, that can't be true. I said, somebody's just lying to you. Because it's not Eaton people. It's the show fabrication people. They're not part of the corporation. They get hired for the day. And he said, yeah, that they, a couple hours go by, I'm on my connected flight. And he's like, yeah, they said they can't find it. I was like, I don't know what to tell you. And so I also went through my Amazon, and I found the lights I bought. So I sent a screen grab of the listing, and then they ended up buying a remote control, which was supposed to come the next day. Well, they bought the whole set of lights, which is like $100. And the remote control didn't come until the middle of the last day. And then they were able to turn the sign green. They sent me a picture of it in green. It looks much better in green, to be honest, but it still lit up. It was fine. But I'm just glad it wasn't stuck on some random color like red. That
flashing.
Makes sense. Yeah, right. Or like mood color, or it's like going through all the colors. But that's annoying. And then when I got in the cab to go to the airport, we drove, just happened to go around the back of the convention center on the way to the airport, and there was a graveyard of 5,000 wooden crates. Because the show was still going on when I left. And I was like trying to quickly scan to see the crate that took the sign. I was like, because he said ultimately, because what happened probably was that the company just said it wasn't in the box because they didn't know to look for it. And then they said, oh, we went and looked. But he's like, how could they look? The crate just goes into Never Never Land. And so, like, can I get that crate back? They said, it's gone until you need to pack up.
Mm. So. Do you think a lot of these trade displays are just thrown in the trash when the show is over?
Like, I would assume so.
Imagine the amount of semis of just trash that leaves that place.
There was a giant yacht in that place. There's the John Deere had this huge track machine with each wheel had a track. So there was four of these, not just two, one on each side. There was two on each side. These big track things that go over land. Huge thing. Like, that was just one of tens of giant machines that were inside. And how they move all this stuff is insane. I can't fathom it. And all gets broken down in a day or two.
After the show, there's like a yacht sticking out of a dumpster in the behind the building. Like, ah,
I was taking a notice of the technology of trade show stuff now. And there was walls, giant walls of LEDs. That was a flexible wall that would probably roll up like a carpet, but still a giant wall, maybe 20 feet tall, maybe 50 feet long. That's a lot of material still to roll up. But a full wall of LEDs and logos and images are swirling on it. Really cool looking stuff. And then most of these giant booths that have these big presentations of a car that has like a smart steering wheel or whatever, has the booth is all covered in stretch fabric. So it looks like a perfectly clean, smooth wall, and you go up and touch it and it's stretch fabric. But a 10-foot wide piece next to another 10-foot wide piece that goes up 40 feet. So that was one thing that was interesting that I noticed. It had nothing really to do with the show. It's just the show, trade show technology, how it's advanced, because these booths have to be set up. I remember when I would go to Toy Fair in the 90s, these booths would be built like a house. It'd be plywood. But now every booth, they're branded color in this big stretch fabric around the whole thing with a logo printed right on it. And so you put up a wire frame and then stretch the fabric over these wire frames. I noticed that.
Imagine the power to all of, you said it's like 4 football fields long, which I don't think is an exaggeration. Like, imagine all the electricity that it takes to do all that. And who figures that out?
Oh, it's crazy. You know what's a crazy show to go to? It would be the FabTech, because you have machines from all over the world, lots of machines from Asia there, and lots of machines from all over the world that are huge. So you think, how'd they get here? And like a big giant press brake that must weigh 40,000 pounds in the middle of the trade show floor working. And it must take 440 electric, 3-phase. And you think, how in the world do they get these things doing this stuff? Crazy.
That's pretty wild. No. Well, other than going to CES, have you? I mean, it's been a while since we've recorded. Yeah. So, have you made anything? Have you?
Or did I did.
You
take I made time a. Off or? So since we, I guess since Christmas, I only published two videos. I did a towel rack, which I thought was going to be a reel. So I went out in the blacksmith shop on a 10-degree day, and I needed a towel rack. Rachel's complaining we don't have a place to put a towel in the kitchen, and I was like, all right. Let me just maybe go make a reel. So I went out and I had enough material to make a 6-minute video. I was like, let me just put up old school 6-minute video. And it did fairly well. And then a couple of days go by and then the new year came and went just before we start. I guess, yeah, the new year started. And I was doing some work at the house and I almost broke the back windshield of my flatbed. And I was like, let me make a cage for that. That'll be tomorrow's video. And it's always this way. I talked about this all the time. It's that video that I think of and then make in the same 3 hours mm-hmm. that does well. Mm-hmm. I did not have the idea to make this video Saturday morning. I guess I kind of vaguely had it Friday night. I wake up Saturday morning. I'm like, I'm going to make the cage for the truck. And I make the video. It took me 4 hours to make the product, maybe 3 hours to make the product, and maybe another 2 hours to edit. Early Saturday night, I published the video. I was ready to go. I might have let it go live a couple hours later. The video, I don't know, I haven't looked lately, but it's like one of my second best performing videos of all time. I mean, of all year. Not of all time.
Of last year or this year? Because this year didn't have a whole lot.
This is so confusing.
No, last year. I mean, even though it came out in 25.
Yeah.
What is going on? HBO is asking me. Let's see. Okay, so now it just fell to position number two. It's 175,000 views. It's 1,000 behind my best performing video of the year. So it'll be, I guess it's going to end up being my second best performing video in the last 13 months.
Huh.
Which is crazy. I thought of it that morning. Crazy. And so yeah. It just gives me that inspiration to do a little bit more of how I started. Just these really spontaneous ideas that I needed around the house. And make a quick video. Both of those videos did not have a voiceover. I tried to do in 2024, I tried to modernize and do voiceovers for everything and put different types of content on Patreon. And those two videos did not have voiceovers and they did great. So I don't know if that has anything to do with it. It also certainly is easy to make the video because then I could just do the voiceover later more leisurely.
Yeah.
So I'm probably going to do more of that. The non-voiceover videos. It's funny, a couple weeks ago I did like a meandering voiceover and I could tell when I'm doing them at 2 in the morning and I'm tired versus when I'm doing them in the daylight. And somebody says, you talk too much. You should just do videos where you don't talk. Because I was like, oh, that's a really good idea. Thanks.
People tell me that all the time, but yeah.
And then, of course, I publish a video with no voiceover, and they're like, it would be really nice to know what's going on here. I mean, like, you could do a voiceover.
I hate your music. You have the best music.
And the comments beside each other.
They'd be right next to each other, yep.
Yep.
So I got some plans for this weekend. I might make a door for the basement of the graveyard house, because now the house is slowly starting. It's not really buttoned up completely, but to keep animals out of the basement, so I might make a door. To keep, I would hate to see like a bear or a deer in the basement because it's kind of faces the big field. So I might do that. That might be a video, and that's a 1-day build for me. So I would start that tomorrow. Oh yeah,
cool.
That's where I'm at.
David, what about you? What have you been up to?
I had quite an experience. So my Christmas gift from Kelly was, it was a secret. She's like, you have a keep this particular weekend open in January. And that's all would tell me. And I was like, okay. And I was like, are we flying? Are we driving? She's like, I'm not telling you until the day.
And so
the day came and she was like, all right, we're driving. And I started to guess where we were going to go. My guess was that we were going to visit the Frank Lloyd Wright house in Pennsylvania called Falling Waters.
Yeah.
Which is not a place you can stay. It's just a place you can visit. It's the most famous Frank Lloyd Wright house in the world. And she looked at me And she's like, no, that's not it. But that look, I was like, I really thought I guessed it. And we started driving up north, and we went to Michigan. And it turns out we went to a Frank Lloyd Wright house in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Those were the posts you showed. Yeah, that was beautiful. Yeah. The Triangle House.
Yes, the Triangle House. So we stayed at this house the whole weekend. This was one of his later homes that he designed later in life, which are actually the more cool homes.
You got to stay there. I didn't realize it during your post.
Yeah, we were there for three days. And the whole house is based on a triangle. So if you look at the floor plan, it's all drawn up in triangles. I'll show this on screen to the people that are watching. Can you guys see that?
Yeah.
So that's the floor plan. Everything is, so all the rooms have angles. There's no 90 degree angles anywhere. The ceiling's at an angle. The only thing that's like 90 degrees is the floor to the wall, and everything else is just crazy. And then Frank also, when he designed a home, he would also design the furniture within the home. So all the furniture in the living room, all the beds, all the little built-in desks, all designed by Frank. And it was just such an amazing experience. And I really wish I would have brought professional recording equipment to document it properly. There, I think in my younger days, I would have, anytime I went on a trip, got to take the camera. You never know. And these days, I just try to travel a little bit lighter. And I just assume like, if there's something I see, I can just film it on my phone. And dang
it. The phone's always looking good. The phone always looks mostly pretty good.
I did a video for my Patreon people, and I used the phone as a microphone, and then I had another just tiny little Sony pocket camera that's like 5 years old as like another camera. And so I did shoot kind of like a walkthrough for Patreon, and then this particular book is just about that house. It's called the Palmer House. And so I've been reading the history of this home and why he built it and everything. And I think I have enough decent photos and enough decent footage where I could make a video. So I talked earlier about, I want to make videos that don't take 2 weeks. And this could be one of those videos if I can. It's going to be a lot of scripting. But I'm going to give it a shot and we'll see. It was just such an amazing experience. I always prefer an experience over an actual physical gift. I think it's just more memorable.
It was really cool watching the chairs and stuff out, and you were pointing out the furniture. It looks like something that any one of us would have made.
So a couple pieces of furniture I stole. Well, I went to Home Depot. I got a tape measure and I got a digital angle gauge, and I took very precise measurements of a few pieces of furniture. One of them is a chair that he designed that's in multiple homes, and then another one is a stool that is throughout this house. It's basically a triangular shaped stool that has a cushion on it, but if you remove the cushion, it turns into a little end table. And there's like 10 of them throughout this house. And I took measurements of all that. I paid for a month of this 3D scanning LiDAR thing for my phone so I could do 3D scans of everything. And I want to make a couple of the projects for future videos. It was so cool. Just not knowing what I was going to experience made the experience so much better. I remember my most favorite movie experience of all time was going to see the Tarantino movie Django Unchained. And I never saw a poster. I never saw a preview. I didn't know anything about the movie. It was I didn't know who was in it. Time frame or anything, and we went to go see the movie on opening night, And it was the most amazing experience ever. Because nowadays you see a trailer, you see posters, you see commercials, and there's all this hype. But not knowing what you're going into and then experiencing something amazing is kind of rare. And
yeah,
this was one of those moments. Yeah,
very cool.
That's awesome. So I have a question though. What did you get Kelly for Christmas?
Nothing nearly that good. Oh my goodness.
Okay. That's kind of what I figured. I mean, you know.
I told her, I'm like, that's it. No more Christmases. No more gift giving, because we can't top this one. And
cool.
I said that actually a couple years ago when she got me a helicopter tour of Toledo. This was another thing. She knows I love experiences. So 3-4 years ago, she's like, make this particular night available. And I'm like, okay. And then we drive out and it's dark and we pull into this parking lot. I'm like, I'm going to get murdered. She's going to murder me. This is it. It was a good life. And then she's like, we just wait here. And I'm like, this is so weird. And all of a sudden this helicopter comes out of the sky, out of nowhere, and lands in front of us. And I was like, whoa, are we getting on that? And Kelly has a fear of like heights. And she's like, yep. And then for an hour, this helicopter just took us around the city. And it was, she's really good at gifts. She's really good at gifts. Yeah.
Man. Wow. Yeah. Well, you lucked out. That's awesome.
Yeah, I got lucky. Yeah. I she's way out of my league.
Well, I didn't do anything like that over the last month or so, but I actually did a whole lot of nothing.
That's what you're supposed to do at the end of the year, right?
Yep. I've said this before, but I like actively have always, even before I was working for myself, I just take off the last couple of weeks of the year. Kids are always home from school. It's a great time for me and the way our life is to just not be tethered to anything and not have a lot of responsibility and to, you know, just be cozy. And so I always do that. And I think this year was the first time, not the first time, the last couple of years have been, those 2 weeks have been far more comfortable not doing anything than the years before. You know, years before it was like, I should take a couple of weeks off. And I enjoy being still for a couple of days, and then I start getting antsy, and then I'm like, oh, you know, I'll just go build this thing without doing a video, or I'll, you know. This was a lot of, like, sweatpants and sitting on the couch and really doing nothing. Yeah, it was a very different type of... It was great, because, you know, our kids are into lots of stuff, and we do our best to really be involved and to go to all their things and to make sure that we are active in what they're doing. I want to take advantage of seeing those things. And so we do a lot of stuff because they do a lot of stuff, and we want to give them a lot of experiences throughout their growing up. This last couple of weeks of the year, all of that stuff, all of the soccer, all of the band, all of the practices, all of the music stuff, just stops. And so for the first time all year long, everybody has nothing to do. And it reminded me this year more than anything else, I think it reminded me of the lockdown times when it was just us, and we didn't have anywhere to go. We couldn't go anywhere. We couldn't do anything, and we were all in the house at the same time. And I loved that. I know a lot of people didn't love that time of the last several years. I loved it. And so this kind of gave me that feeling again, except that my kids are several years older. We can do more stuff together that we both enjoy. And so it was a really great time. Christmas was great. We had a lot of fun. We just goofed off a lot together and had a good time. And then they were supposed to go back to school on the 5th or 6th or whatever that Monday was. And Sunday, we got... For us, a ton of snow.
Oh yeah,
and so we got like 6 or 8 inches, and then we had ice, and then we had 3 or 4 more inches on top of that. And so they didn't go to school for a couple more days. Their break got extended longer, and then they got to go in late a couple of days. And that was a perfect excuse for me to continue not working for a couple more days here and there. So it's been a really unproductive, intentionally unproductive last month, and I've really liked it. I've been anxious to get back to, you know, being productive in the last week or so, but kind of did a whole lot of nothing, and it was pretty great. And the weather here has been, since we got that snow, there's still snow on the ground. It's been so cold that it hasn't gone away yet, which is weird for us. We never have snow for more than a couple of days at a time, and we're in like the, I don't know, 10-day mark or something now. And so that's kind of cool. It's something different for us. It's especially cold for here, so can't do as much stuff. I can't really work on the cars out at the farm. But I did get to go out to the farm while the snow was on the ground, and it was still real fluffy and everything. My youngest and Jenny and I all went out there one day and just like walked the trails, and it was so gorgeous. I have not had the chance to go walk in those woods with snow on the ground because we don't get it that often. And it was great. Like, we spent a couple hours just walking the trail and throwing snowballs and, you know, picking up giant ice chunks off of trees and throwing them places. And, man, we just had a great time. It was really cool.
Man, so half the country is frozen in snow and ice, and the other half is on fire.
Yeah.
It's crazy what's going on out in L.A. I mean, love to anybody out in L.A. that is suffering through that. It's just so tragic.
Yeah. I've not personally, but, you know, on Instagram, a lot of our fellow maker YouTube type people who are out there, and I don't know of anybody that's lost everything. I think the areas that have been like decimated are different parts than where all the people that I know anyway live, and so that's been amazing, but it has just been horrifying to watch.
Yeah. The fires are about 20 miles from my brother's house at the moment. He's fine. Everyone asks about my brother and his kids. They're fine. They're deep in the valley. And I hate to say, I don't think it could get to them, but after what we just witnessed, who knows what could happen anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. There's we were on the Maker Alliance hangout last night. Oh, that's right. Colin and Samir did.
Both lost their homes.
They both lost their home, yeah.
We were on the Maker Alliance hangout last night. That's our Patreon people for I Like to Make Stuff, and one of the guys was talking about how one of his good friends lives out there and they're still at home, but he can see the fire from, he said it's less than a mile from his house and he can see it. Whoa. So he and his wife have been taking turns doing, like, he takes nights and he stays up all night and watches outside for things flying in and landing, and then she does it during the day. And I mean, just like, what a way to live. It's wild, but so, yeah. But I guess the last couple of weeks have been kind of chill. The next month is going to be, or next several weeks, is going to be interesting because I'm reshooting our Fusion course. Our Fusion course has been really great for us, but we shot it a long time ago. And Fusion has changed a fair amount, and I've learned even more stuff since then. So for the last week or so, I've been going through the old course and like retaking the course myself, but at the same time redoing everything, updating everything with how Fusion is now. And so, and I mean, probably today or maybe tomorrow, we're actually going to start reshooting. Yesterday we set up, or the day before, we set up the studio. Like, my 3D printer room is now the studio, and so we got, you know, light set up and boom microphone hanging off the ceiling, and like, it's all film studio looking. So we're about to start shooting that, and that is hopefully going to be out, you know, early spring. And so my plan, I'm going to say this publicly for the first time, my plan is that anybody who buys the course beforehand, anybody who's ever bought it, will get a full replacement of the course with this new one for free, even though it's going to be better and bigger and it's going to have more examples and stuff like that. They're going to get that. And then I think we're going to have to raise the price on the course just because it's been 4 years, 5 years since we created it. So if you've been thinking about buying it, go buy it before we put the new one out. I'm just going to go ahead and say that for everybody listening. but I'm pretty excited about updating it. and just adding more stuff to it. I think it's been beneficial to enough people that I feel really confident in, not that it's perfect or anything, but I feel confident that it's useful. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
And more and more people have suggested that, have mentioned that they've used your course.
Oh.
In the last few months. I know we talked about it privately, how successful it is, but more and more people are like, oh, yeah, well, I did Bob's course, and I'm blah, 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 blah. I've heard that more often in the last few months.
That's great.
Than ever before. Yeah.
I talked to a guy last week, and actually before the holidays, it was really interesting. I got a lot of emails from people who were asking how they could buy the course as a gift for somebody else.
Oh,
and we've done
cool.
this before. But it was really cool. This year, we had like a lot more of them. But I talked to this guy. I think his name's Sean. And he was talking about how he and his daughter, who's a young teen, watched the videos together and all this stuff. And she asked him for my Fusion course for Christmas. A 14 or 15 or whatever year old girl asking
cool.
for this. I was like, man, that feels great. That feels like somebody who needed, who is capable and interested, you know, and is ready for instruction is asking to have that at that age. That's so cool. So stuff like that makes me even more motivated to, yeah, we need to keep this alive. We need to keep it better. We need to keep it fresh. We need to keep it relevant so that it is useful for those young people who are coming up and like finding a use for that type of knowledge, you know, as they're growing. So that's really cool. But that's going to be the next several weeks of me like heads down, you know, in presenter mode doing videos, and then Forby having a tremendous amount of editing to do.
Does the program have AI prompts yet? Because I've seen some programs that do. Or maybe it's just individual programs that are only AI prompts.
There might be in some of the manufacturing, the paid manufacturing stuff, maybe. I honestly don't know. The course that we do is all focused on what's capable in the free version.
Yeah.
That's cool. Which is like most everything that Fusion, what you're paying for is really advanced stuff in a, in like a pretty corporate environment, I think. Most of that stuff is not things that people would actually use. I mean, if you have a 5-axis CNC, you're going to have to pay for Fusion. Mm-hmm. But if you have a 5-axis CNC, you probably don't care about paying for Fusion. That's the way I look at it. So, the free one works pretty well. So, anyway, I don't think there are any AI things built into the free version yet that I've seen anyway. But anyway, that's where my next several weeks is going to go, and I'm only going to put out one video. Actually, we did put out a video this month that was supposed to be out at the end of last month, but we just went ahead and pushed it. And then I'm going to do one video this month and otherwise just focus on the course and try to, you know, make it the priority. I want it to be done well. I want it to be done soon. So that's kind of what I'm into. Mm. And I'm anxious to work on the Gia, but it's too cold. And so one of the things that I've been, and I think we might have talked about this, one of the things I'm wanting to do sooner than later is figure out how to close in the barn out there, replace the big sliding door with some sort of a garage door type situation. Did I tell you about my cedar doors that I built out there?
I don't think
so. Yeah.
So a long time ago, I made those barn doors that were like out of cedar, kind of angled chevron type, whatever. And a woodpecker found the barn.
Yes.
And so the first time I went out there and I saw there's like two holes that are about, I don't know, an inch and a half. There's just like two of them. It's like all the way through. I'm like, dang, that woodpecker found it. And I went in the barn and he's in there hanging out inside the barn, asleep on the wall.
That's cool.
Oh, well, that's kind of a bummer. So, I came back a few weeks later. I'm not out there a whole lot. And now there's like eight holes. I don't know why the first two holes didn't work as well, but apparently he needed to make more holes to get in and out of the barn. So those doors are, I mean, they didn't keep weather out anyway, but they're going to have to be replaced. So I'm trying to figure out the process and all the different things that I want to do out there as far as sealing up gaps, insulating walls, which isn't going to do a ton, but it would probably help. There's some roof work that probably needs to be it was poorly done before I got it, so I have to take off some roof panels and replace some stuff. So I'm trying to make a list of all the things that I could do out there to make it a little bit more, you know, closed in. And I don't know how tight I can get a building after it's built as far as keeping out spiders and bugs and stuff, but that's kind of what I'm looking at. So, yeah, David.
May I brag for 1 second? You know, I've gone through your Fusion 360 course, and it is fantastic. And I've actually gone through it twice because I tend to learn things and then forget them, and then I have to relearn them. And a few days ago, I was like, I need a place to hang cables and headphones. And I designed this thing in Fusion 360, 3D printed it, and was able to make this thing in a matter of an hour or so. Most of the time, it was just waiting for the 3D print to get done. And I'm going to move my camera and show you. But it's super simple. But it's just these little pegs.
Oh, yeah.
With a, I don't know if I can get this in there. There's a drywall screw. So it's just a little peg with a drywall screw going into some wood. And it looks nice and was a quick fix.
Yeah.
And it was so satisfying that I have a problem. I can make this happen with a 3D printer and it looks good.
And yeah.
That's cool. Those are the fun ones.
Yeah, it's a super cool feeling to be able to do that. I know, like, I was hesitant to do a lot of 3D printing for many years, even though I had them here, and you know, but I've fallen into that right there, that I need a thing to do this thing, and it's going to take me an hour tops, and I know it, so I'm just going to do it. Like, there's 3D printers, I'm going to use them. It's great.
Well, it started off with I need to hang these cables up here, so I just took really long drywall screws, screwed them into the side of this cabinet here, and it was just screws sticking out, and I was hanging cables on just long screws. I'm like, that's really ugly. How can I make that better? I'm like, oh, I'll just make a cover out of, with my 3D printer. And I'm like, this looks so good. Why isn't this something that you can buy?
Yeah. Well, you can make them and sell them, and then people can buy them.
No desire. I'm not into products.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the long way of describing what I've been up to for the last month or so. Jimmy, you had like a...
Dave and I were talking before we got started, and we basically made an observation about how, for instance, Ringo Starr and the Rolling Stones and these people are still making art into their 80s. And do we think we will still be making art in one shape, form, or fashion well into our 80s? And I think it's an absolute yes for all three of us. I can't imagine any of us bailing out, but just talk about the topic of making as we get older. I mentioned my dad passed away at 83. I'm 58 at the moment. I don't know what the quick math is, how much time is left over. But it's like 20-something years. And how can I utilize... Just saying. I mean, I could get hit by an asteroid in the afternoon of today. But in the meantime, I just could assume that I might live as long as my dad. And what's going to happen with my work in those next 20-plus years... What can I do? How can I do it? And I often think that I'll become more of a fine artist. In fact, Rachel sold two products that need to be fabricated based on drawings. She sometimes gets hired to decorate full apartment buildings. They might say they have 200 or 300 spaces and they have a budget of this many hundreds of thousands of dollars to fill in these spaces. And out of this one apartment building, the complex that she's been hired as an art consultant, basically, she placed two things made from me. So it would be the first time in my life I sold fine art. Wow. And obviously, you know, it's good to know people, right? I never would have placed that if I wasn't dating the girl who does those things. And she said, you have an incredible ability. She sees artists her whole life. She's 40-something years old, and she's been in the art world. And she said, I'm more capable than a lot of the people she's ever represented, but I don't make fine art. I make functional objects and design. And she's like, you have everything there. You got to start playing around. She's like, in fact, I'm going to try and sell some pieces, think of stuff, go to two things, place them, blah, 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 blah. So that's the beginning of my so-called abstract art career. And I think I've talked behind the scenes with you guys about some of the stuff I started playing around with. And that's based on those products that I've been making in the past. Last year I made them. She was able to sell two pieces. And it's not a lot. It's not a huge amount of money. It's certainly a day's worth of work for, you know, a lot of thousands of dollars. But I have to split it with the gallery. That's her. She's the gallerist. But going into my older years, I certainly feel like I will be doing more of that. I certainly want to. But I also have to pay the bills. So I have to see if there is a market for me to do that. In the meantime, like the big bench that I made recently, which was obviously to fulfill an obligation for the sawmill company, but I did make a piece that I was very passionate about, that big piece of log that became a bench. And I want to do more stuff like that, but it certainly would help if somebody wanted to buy it. Mm-hmm. And this economy in the last year has been really rough. And it just seems to be marked by so many people complaining about not selling stuff. And I know Woodstock up the road, Woodstock, the town of Woodstock, New York, where the concert was, or what the concert's named for, is about 20 miles from me. And I know some people that own shops there. And a lot of shops on Main Street are closing because the economy's just been so bad. Nobody's buying anything. But I'm hoping that'll snap back. And then I'll have the opportunity to make more abstract art, more functional art.
Well, and there's this interesting, like, cost disparity between the things that would sell in a small town gallery versus the things that are bought by art collectors and by celebrities. And, you know, like those are not the same thing. And you're in a position specifically where you've built a life and a following around making a certain type of thing and being able to make money from it a certain way. And you still got so much life left that you can transition slowly, not like, all of a sudden, I have to start making fine art that sells to rich people. You know, you have a long time to be able to transition from my art is paid for this way to my art is paid for this way.
It's true, because Rachel, when we first started discussing the idea of trying to make me an artist and my capabilities turn them towards art, she's like, maybe we'll make up a fake name and da-da-da-da, you know. And then she thought about it one day. She's like, you don't need a fake name. You have an amazing career. You could certainly transition in your career from one thing to another, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. In fact, it's a much better story than trying to say
you came out of nowhere.
Person came out of nowhere. Yeah. So she thought this through, trying to figure out how to sell me. And so this complex down near the city where she placed maybe like 100 and something pieces, she went through her roster of artists and then other artists, and she met new people, and she would go to galleries and. It's a lot of work. It's not easy. You get a huge budget, and then you have to decide, okay, this piece is X amount of thousands of dollars, and that X amount of thousands. None of them are going to be $100,000 because that would blow too much of the budget. So all the pieces are maybe $20,000 is probably the most expensive piece. But it is a big name builder, and they want an impressive situation. It's a residential building down near the city. And there's so many common space. It's a complex. It's like three buildings. So there's lots of common spaces. When you walk outside an elevator and you look at a picture, like, what is that? It could be something they buy from some random art manufacturer, or you could do something like with Rachel and go and find a real artist that made it in the area because they want all local people. And, you know, all basically New Yorkers. They want all New York people to be the artist there so that if anybody follows up, they could. And it's also going to be part of the PR. It's like they've given all this work to local artists.
Yeah.
So I'll take it. But getting older, I see myself doing more of that stuff. And, you know, it's just kind of this is like a silly excuse, but that's partly why I bought that tractor, is because I want to do more large-scale sculpture. And having that tractor, I could lug around a giant log. I could lug around for instance, I have the old Cadillac now is on the property. I moved it here last week. And it doesn't run under its own power yet, so I have to lug it around and pull it around with the tractor, which in the past I would have been like, that car doesn't run. I have to get a car that at least runs because I can't move it around. But now with the tractor, I could probably forklift the thing and pick it up and put it where I want. Hmm. In fact, part of what I want to try and do today and tomorrow is get it up on stand so I could remove the wheels and really get into it and start looking at the brakes and stuff. and start figuring out. There is a, we have here in the town called the Rat Rod, and I'm just using that as a goal to have this car ready for the Rat Rod event in August. So I have that many months to get it running. Certainly a lot to do, but just want to play around with that.
Awesome.
Yeah, but as I see myself getting older, being more of an abstract artist. And I certainly am not going to stop moving.
Yeah.
In fact, the minute I stop moving, I fall asleep.
Yep.
I mean, so I know you talked about a few weeks back just the how that transition has at least something to do with just the, I don't know, the change in manual labor. Like, it's harder to do manual labor type work.
Yeah.
These
yeah.
days than it yeah. was 10 years ago, and it will yeah. be harder in 10 years than it yeah. is now.
That's why I was kind of dipping into the leather work, because it could sit there and yeah. do it, and it's not quite as taxing. At the same time, yesterday I'm sledgehammering open a wall in the basement of the graveyard house to lower this beam to level the floor, which is all going to be coming up in the next video, and moving rocks and getting mouthfuls of dirt using moving rocks that haven't moved in 100 years. That was fun.
Sounds like it. But the difference there is that, like, if you're doing manual labor to that thing that you just described, you can't sell that as art, right? You can't sell that effort and that backbreaking labor as art. You're selling, maybe, the piece of property, and that is one little piece of this huge effort that anybody could have swung that hammer and it mm-hmm. still got to the same result. You putting in the manual labor of lifting a log up with a tractor and then chainsaw carving some big thing into it, the end result of that is something that only you could do.
Mm.
Somebody else could have done it differently, but the end result specifically is unique to you.
Mm.
And so that labor being invested in something that is unique to you, I think is a difference, right? And there's probably some sort of a difference in your motivation and willingness to be sore, you know, to do that kind of work versus like, I'm just going to bang holes in walls with a sledgehammer for the rest of my life.
Oh, certainly. I mean, I like, as I get older, that's why I believe it or not, I'm still keeping up with the bike. It's not nearly, I got the bike up, but I'm going to work out every night. And I did for 6 months. I worked out every night. And then I started working out every other night. And then I work out 3 days a week. And sometimes I work out once a week. Sometimes I work out three times a week. But as I get older, I have to keep moving. And at the end of every day, the other night I didn't feel like doing the bike, but I went for a 2 mile walk. You know, so I'm always doing something. It's not quite necessarily as backbreaking as doing like a 10 mile ride on the bike, but it's something. You know, my walks usually involve some up and down hills, which is taxing. It's not a flat road. But as I get older, I want to continue to stay physical, no matter what. I mean, I watched my dad. Not, I don't want to say wither away, but I saw him slowly begin to not be able to move as much and carry plywood. But he still ignored all of those signs, and he never complained once that he couldn't do anything. He just kept doing it. He was picking up smaller pieces and lighter pieces of equipment, but he never just said, I can't move anymore. Nope. Even, you know, even when he was dazed and he wasn't quite 100% here, he was still, we joked and said that he's got the DNA of a worker ant, and he has to constantly rearrange and move stuff no matter what's going on. So I certainly feel like that's how I'll be.
Yeah.
You keep saying that.
Is there a dog having a dream somewhere?
Yes. I didn't know if you could hear that or not.
Yeah.
Little Duke is dreaming of squirrels.
Oh, that's cute.
Jimmy keeps saying, keep moving. And that was my grandpa's phrase. He wore a hat that said, keep moving. And I did a relief print with that phrase a few years ago. And I think that's the key, is to stay busy and keep moving. Grandpa was in his wood shop at 100 years old. He almost lived to 101, 1 month away. And up until about 3 months before he passed, he was still making those little crosses. And that's the key, is just to have a purpose and to keep doing mm-hmm. something. I can't imagine not making stuff, whether it's music or photography or in the wood shop, or I don't know what I'll be doing when I get older. But I can't imagine not making.
You think
anything.
We'll still be doing YouTube in 10 years from now, at least?
Well, that's not up to us.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, man, it was just really cool to have my main inspiration be able to do what he wanted to do up until that long. And then, you know, since we stayed at that Frank Lloyd Wright house, I've been on this Frank Lloyd Wright kick studying him, and he made up until he designed stuff up until death. And I think if you're born to make stuff, that's just what you do. That's why Paul McCartney is still playing shows at 80 some years old, and Ringo Starr is releasing albums, and the Rolling Stones are still doing what they do. And it doesn't matter if you don't like what they did now and you only like what they did in the 60s. What matters is they're living the lives that they want to live in the later stage, and that's where I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and be making art into the sunset, you know.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have this weird. That's not weird. Probably it's probably pretty common. I can feel myself as I'm getting older, and I'm starting to find those limitations of, like, you know, my back hurts, so I'm going to lift this thing differently or whatever, or lift fewer of them or ask for help or whatever. I find myself, instead of settling into that, and I talked about this a couple weeks ago, like, I don't want to settle into this is just how I am now. I fight back against it. Like, instead of just settling into my back is tender and I need to be careful because it's problematic over and over. Instead, I'm like, yeah, but what kind of training can I do to make my back stronger so that I don't have to do this? Like, what extra effort can I put into? What thing can I design to make it easier to lift these panels? What, you know?
And there's a solution for that at the electronics show. There are these body armor things where you can pick stuff up.
Oh, like an exoskeleton thing?
It's becoming a popular thing. Yeah, Festool sells one of them, but there was a company there from Asia that has all those things, like helps you walk, pick up, carry, hold your arms over your head.
So maybe I need one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could be like a robotic grandfather. That'd be awesome.
You look like one of those cars that turn into robots. What is that old TV show?
GoBots.
Transformers?
Yeah, those, both of those.
Both of you. You two are awful.
Oh, so
you could be like a Volkswagen Rabbit during the day, but in the evening you could be a maker robot.
It's funny. So Kelly has watched all the Star Trek stuff, and I noticed over the years, she's not like a Star Trek fan, she just has watched it. Casually, and I saw, and I think it was like HBO or whatever HBO streaming service is called now, all the Star Trek movies and shows were on there, and it was just like, you know, there's like a dozen of them. I'm like, oh, look, Kelly, there's you can rewatch all the Star Wars movies. And and I didn't realize what I said. And she looked at me and she's like, you realize how offensive that is, right? And I was like, oh, I called Star Trek Star Wars. Oops.
Yeah. There's a meme, there's a ton of versions of it where it's like, I don't even remember. It's one of the captains from Star Trek, and he's like, use the Force, Bilbo, or something like that. He takes all of these different, like,
that's good.
And just jams them all together. Yeah, it's pretty funny. Anyway, I think, you know, as I get older, I'm trying to find ways to, like, push through it. I know there's going to be a limit. There's going to be a time when, like, I can't fight change in that way, and I have to adjust what I make to how I am. I understand that that is an inevitability. But at the same time, I'm not there yet, and I'm not at a point where I want to start backing off prematurely from being active and being like creative and trying to be creative in the ways that I can physically do now. There will come a time when I have to be creative differently. But you know, like building things and moving cars, and I don't know. I just don't want to settle into any limitations that are not being forced on me yet, you know. But I think looking ahead at what, like you're doing, Jimmy, looking ahead at in 10 years, in 20 years, what can I go ahead and start working on now that will set me up to be ready to be creative and be enabled to be creative and to be productive at those different points in my future, you know? Because I know, like, you know, my dad has been retired for quite a while. he's still very active. He was telling me yesterday how he's going to be building multiple windmills for their church for this like kids thing that they're doing, this art thing.
Oh, cool.
He makes stuff, and he makes stuff that he wants to make, and he makes stuff for other people, and he doesn't, you know, he's not selling it, he's not showing it to anybody, it's not anything like that. He just is continuing to be healthy and active and creative, mm-hmm. And that's absolutely something that I want to set myself up now and in the next few years to be able to do when I'm in my 70s and 80s. That's kind of runs in my family, so I just want to make sure I keep that up. And I think I've been, you know, like silently working on music as well. And I think, you know, David, you mentioned that. I think that's one of those things that's very different from what we do on YouTube as far as, you know, what people know me for or whatever. But it's something that I want to be able to continue to do long term. And I think it's probably easier to do as an older person. And so getting back into that now and building some, you know, patterns of like doing music, making music now will make it easier. So when I'm not 75 and go like, well, I guess I should learn how to record stuff again. You know, like I want to kind of set it up now. But we've been talking for a long time. And any other thoughts on getting? I don't know. I think we're gonna get old. We've talked about that. We get old. But I think I lost my AirPod. Preparing for that in a way to make it as, you know, useful and sustainable as possible, making art, I think is like the key.
Gotta keep moving.
So yeah. I'm not gonna have any kids, so nobody's gonna take care of me when I get old. So when I get put into a nursing home, I'm gonna need a hobby that I can do in bed. So I gotta figure out what that hobby is
knitting.
Gonna be now. Mini stuff, yeah.
Knitting.
Oh, knitting. Knitting.
Yeah, I've always wanted to learn how to knit. I'm not even joking.
Yeah.
I can't get it. One of these days, I'll figure it out.
I still want to learn how to sew. Like,
me too. I think, yeah. I've been thinking about it a lot more lately. It's just, I don't know where to put a machine.
Mm.
Come hang out with me for a week and we'll do a sewing intensive.
Yeah.
We should. Yep.
And my list of things to do is I have the patterns, I'm going to make a jacket. I've never made a jacket. I made a pair of jeans years and years before YouTube. But by dismantling a pair that existed and just copying it pattern by pattern. But this time I have a paper pattern for a jacket. I'm like a workwear jacket. I'm going to try and do that for a video soon. When it warms up a little bit. It's too cold in there.
Out of denim or out of
just like fabric from Joann's, yeah. Okay. Maybe I have lots of denim from the jean business that didn't work out, so I got lots of that. So I might do a combination of denim with another fabric that I picked.
Speaking of Joann's, I went to Joann's yesterday to get fabric to cover, like, just black fabric to cover the bottom of some shelves. Again, mm-hmm. the background of the studio thing I'm setting up. So I go and I'm like, clearance aisle, I need black, you know. And so I just went and found this bat of stuff. And took it up there, and she told me however much it was. I don't remember. And I needed 4 yards of it. And so it was going to add up. And went up, and they asked me if I had a phone number, and I said no. But I gave her the phone number, and so she set up the account or whatever. And me giving them my phone number made it 70% off.
Yeah, they have all these crazy discounts that
you'll have. You've got to download the app.
It was $23 for me to get 4 yards of black, stretchy, like...
When you go to Joann's, they always tell me when I go to the one in Albany, they're all very nice. He says, do you have the app? I go, no. He goes, well, go to the website and just download this coupon. You'll get 30% off of everything you buy today.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just chirp the coupon off of your screen.
Joann's and Michael's both. You have to have the app when you go and you'll save so much money.
That's wild. But isn't Joann's like going bankrupt? Didn't they go bankrupt?
It looks like they're bankrupt every time you go in the store.
Well, the lady was saying, she was like, I heard her talking to the lady in front of me in line, and she said, well, corporate only gives us 2 employees. So we have one at the desk and one at the cut table back there.
Yeah. The guy that cut my thing.
There's 2 people.
The guy that cut my thing was my cashier like 10 minutes later. Yeah. I was like, how'd you get over here so fast?
Like, I mean, I appreciate the 70% discount, but. If you didn't give me a 70% discount, maybe you could hire another person. Pretty wild. Anyway, all right. Well, I want to say thank you to our Patreon supporters because they're still here, even though we didn't record for like a month.
Thank you.
They're awesome. And I want to say a special big thanks to the top supporters, Nick Ryan, Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Mancrafting, Chad's Custom Creations, Rich at Lowen Design, Odin Leather Goods, Sean Beckner, Scott at Dad It Yourself DIY, Jeff at the New Janky Workshop, Warren Works, Michael Menegin, Crabtree Creative, and Matthias Garnow. But also, I got an email this week from Stark's Lagoon. Stark has been supporting us for a long time.
I met him in person when I was in Sweden. We got to.
He's got an awesome name. But he asked.
I know his real name, but I can't tell.
Oh, well, I like that name. But he was like, I can't seem to find how to join the top group of people to support the show. He was trying his best to figure out how to be in that top group. And it's a limited number of spots so that I don't have to read 300 names or whatever every week. And it was already sold out, so he couldn't join that. But he was trying to, and I thought that was really awesome. So I want to say thank you to Stark's Lagoon, whatever your real name is, for supporting us, but also, you know, wanting to like kind of go above and beyond. I think that's super cool. But there's a lot of people over there that support us for a dollar or whatever amount, and all of it is helpful. Every little bit makes it possible for us to do. We pay an editor who posts the show and, you know, cuts the video for YouTube and all that type of stuff. And so any support is awesome, and we're really grateful for it. And everybody at every level gets the after show, which we're going to record right after this. Ooh. There is video on YouTube. There is audio on Patreon. And you can get that after show by going to patreon.com/makingit and join up at any level. And we had somebody send me a message like last week, 2 weeks ago, saying, I actually really love it when Jimmy makes all those obnoxious noises.
You're lying.
I said, well, all right. Yeah. You guys got anything to recommend?
I just sent to the chat, 60 Minutes goes and meets the people at Hermes, which is a 400-year-old company. Did you guys know that? No. Hermes, like the you see companies. Like the airport fancy stores, the Hermes bag, the Birkin bag. All the women in my life were constantly telling me that I could have the next Birkin bag with my leather stuff. So I've been kind of paying attention to Hermes, and then out of nowhere, this video pops up of an intensive interview with the 10th generation. I'm making that up. I don't know. He's several generations away from the original person who started it. They were a horse harness company in France, and now they make these leather bags. Everything is hand-sewn. Nothing is used. There is not a machine in the factory. Everything is hand. That's what made me think of it, Dave, when you said you wanted to get a machine. Maybe you should be like Hermes and just get yourself a stitching fork and a needle.
Maybe I should.
Wow.
You got a place to keep that, I would assume. But it's a great it's a great deep dive into a company that I just assume started in the 1970s. I had no idea that they started in like the 1570s. But check out that video. I've been watching a lot of 60 Minutes lately. I missed it because of regular television viewing has gone by the way. But now 60 Minutes pops up a lot more often because I've been paying a little bit more attention. So
you might want to check out 60 Minutes Australia as well.
I watch that too.
Okay.
I watch that too, yeah.
Okay.
That pops up all the time.
Yeah. They have some really good ones over there. It's better than the American version.
Yeah, it's usually pretty good.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I have something for everybody. So I got three. This first one you don't have to put in the show notes. But if you have seen the movie The Substance, there's a great making of. And so if you The Substance is a fantastic movie, but I don't recommend it to everybody.
I still can't figure out if the movie was a joke or not.
Oh my goodness, it's intense.
We went to see it at a drive-in. I wanted to leave when things start getting crazy.
Oh wow.
It was so ridiculous.
I loved it. It is not for everybody. But if you do like it, go find the making of, because it's really good, and it's about empowerment, and it's fantastic. So that is my pick that doesn't go in the description. I've got two other ones. The one is Josh Scott, the founder of JHS Pedals. They make all kinds of guitar pedals. He has a personal YouTube channel, and he's been basically recommending books. And Josh and I, we must share the same library, because I'm like, oh, I've read that book. Or there's been a couple of times like, oh, I definitely need to go read or listen to that book. So that is one. Josh is, he's not funny on his he's serious. He's talking about these books on his main channel, or on his personal channel, on his the JAHS Guitar Pedals channel. He is hilarious, and it's a very dry humor, and it makes me laugh all the time. My other pick is, and I just saw this yesterday, and it's by Fujifilm USA, and it's just this short little film called The Promise of Spring, and it's about a mother who is like the go-to person in professional photographers, the go-to person for backdrops. So she paints these massive backdrops. And her daughter is also in it, who started to get into backdrops and then realized she wanted to kind of go her own way. And there's a, it's a 15-minute movie, but it's kind of like the back and forth of like, should your children carry on what you've been building, or do you let them do what they want? And so it's interesting. So there you go.
Cool. Sound like good ones. I've got a couple. One is, let me find what it's called. It's a video on the Eastwood channel. They do make tools and car stuff. And it's step-by-step guide how to paint a car at home. I've watched a lot of car painting videos over the last several years, trying to like get the process in my head so that when I get to that stage in 2045, then I will know what to do to be able to paint the car. This was the most condensed. It's 16, almost 17 minutes long. And it's the entire process start to finish with no fluff and no... Like, it is a guy saying, we do this, and then we do this, and we use this grit, and we go to here, and we do this thing, and then we put this stuff on. And it's, obviously, they're showing Eastwood products, but it is start to finish. And I've seen things like that before, and they spend a lot of time talking about this one thing that's kind of like, okay, yeah, I got to move on. This was a nicely paced, complete coverage. And the buffing section that they talk about... That, to me, has always seemed like, yeah, I mean, that's a thing you do to get it shiny, right? Like, that's a thing I'll do down the road. But he shows how the process of this buffing and cutting thing, this little three-step thing, actually removes all the orange peel. And he shows really close up before and after of what the paint looked like with the clear on it versus after this buffing. And that right there seems to be how you make a car look like a professional restoration.
Yeah.
And so I learned a lot from the video, but that right there made me realize that is a thing that I'm going to have to learn a lot about, because that's going to be the different, you know, between a home paint job and not a home paint job. It looks like that might be the thing. So that was really cool. The other thing, I I found this video simply because it had a Land Cruiser in the thumbnail. But I clicked on it because it's a pretty house, and it's inside a builder's handcrafted family home, designed to be simple and natural. That's the title. So, not a great title. But it's on a channel called, and it's a cool video. It's talking to this couple talking about their home and how they, why they built it the way that they built it and how simple it is, and it's really nice looking. It's on a channel called House Story, which I was not familiar with. And every video that I've kind of flipped through, I haven't watched a bunch of them, every video is the same documentary style, interviewing the homeowner about why they made their home the way that they made it. And it's just like really cool looking, unique, out in the woods, awesome mid-century. There's just all these different versions of homes, and they talk to the people about why it is that way. And so, you know, if you're into architecture or Fender cool homes or whatever, it might be something worth checking out. Not a big channel. They have 8,000 subscribers. 20 videos, but well made and some very cool looking stuff. So go check that out. That's it. You guys got anything else? Cool. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for coming back this year to listen to us.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next time.
Later.
Love you guys. Welcome. 2025. Starting off with a raw. Roar.
You got to say you love them at the
end. Oh, I said it in the beginning. I said I love you. Oh.